what I was going to ask you to do is just talk about college hockey, but more importantly, what got you involved to this point and what got you involved in hockey? Go ahead.
Thanks, Andy, and thanks for having me. And actually, I blocked out a big window here, so happy to stick around until the last question's answered. I got involved in hockey probably a lot like everybody that's involved today did. I grew up in northern Minnesota in Duluth, and I'm 50 now, so I was growing up in the 70s, early 80s, and just happened to be that's what I did all the time in the winter. I played hockey all winter, and I played baseball all summer, and threw in a lot of football and basketball and other sports too, kind of that type of childhood. And I just developed a real sincere love for the sport. And then went away to school at St. Thomas, University of St. Thomas, which is here in the Twin Cities. And following that, graduated, entered into real life, needed to find something. I was naive enough to call the Minnesota North Stars to see if they might hire me. Looking back, I laugh at it, but it turned out they did. They hired me as an intern in their marketing department. So I learned a whole new facet of the world. I thought back then that, you know, people just walked up to a window, bought a ticket, and went to a game. And I really learned behind the curtain of how the sports business side works. I became intrigued by it. So ever since then, I've really been involved in sports almost my whole life, and primarily in hockey. And especially in the past, like 10 years or so, between Minnesota Hockey and College Hockey Inc., yeah, my focus has really been with what I would call hockey developmental organizations, meaning working with young aspiring players, and trying to create an environment that allows them to get the most out of what they're trying to achieve, whether it's to reach the highest level as a player or whether it's simply just to have a really good experience playing hockey as a young person. And then layered in that is a real nice component, which I like to call is both College Hockey Inc. and Minnesota Hockey have a notion of trying to do their part to grow the game, get more kids playing the sport, get more people involved in the game. And that really excites me, motivates me, and I like that aspect of my job. So that's how I've ended up where I am today. Pretty lucky guy, mainly a product of some good fortune, some circumstances, and some hard work too.
Well, that's fantastic. That's good information. And what I love about that is you grew up in hockey. We're the same age. You said you were 50, and I'm 50 as well. So that's kind of cool. We both have a passion for this game, and just like yourself, I tell my son, he's very fortunate because he's grew up in a hockey rink and a gym, and we live and breathe hockey. But truly, there's a lot of people that are in the game, and they're not necessarily in it for the right reasons. And I could tell after our conversations and just that introduction that we're literally here to help people make good decisions and make them the best versions of themselves as they can. So that's fantastic. We're on the same page with that. But can you tell us now about what your role, or what College Hockey Inc. is, especially for us, for the Canadians? We grow up looking at different avenues, or, it's college is almost a pipe dream. So what does College Hockey Inc. do? And what is that exactly is your role?
College Hockey Inc., good timing on your question, because we are celebrating our 10th anniversary this month. We started in November of 2009. We're funded primarily from a grant from USA Hockey, but we also have a few other smaller funding sources. And in essence, I would say we are here to promote, market, and ensure that people, in this case, young aspiring players and the people that influence them, know all that they should know about college hockey. And that really, there's two facets to that. One is they know just how good it is. There still is some misconceptions or perceptions about college hockey that are not equal to the reality of it today in terms of what it can do for you as a hockey player, and especially in certain areas over other areas, Canada probably being the biggest one of those. And then the other piece is just to leverage college hockey as much as we can so that it impacts the growth of the sport throughout the world. When you think about what college football does for the sport of football, when you think about what college basketball does for the sport of basketball, college hockey does some of that, but not enough. So we feel that we need to catch the sport up to those other sports so that we can just do our part in growing the sport in the world. So that's one piece. And then the other piece is just the more of the less interesting, but the just as important aspect of when somebody says, okay, I'm interested in this, what do I need to know to make sure that they maintain their academic eligibility and their amateur eligibility. Most other forms of developmental hockey are really just hockey oriented. So you have to be good enough to play, but that's really it. In NCAA hockey, of course, you have to be good enough to play, but you also have to have the appropriate academics to go along with it.
Right. So, okay. So having said that, let's go into the scholarship process since you talked about that, because I know that's one of the things that you do. Now, everyone can get this information on collegehockeyinc.com.
Correct.
I think a lot of times hearing the words and the tone goes a long way. So when it comes down to getting a scholarship, I'm going to keep it fairly simple right now. What is the process? I know there's academics, there's advisors, what other things that we have to be concerned about for getting to keep your eligibility?
Okay. So I'll just kind of start talking and steer me in the direction if I'm getting sure. off a bit. I would say the first and foremost, the main thing to understand is the timing of when all of this occurs. So I'll throw some facts out there. I'm going to work backwards.
Yep.
The average age of an NHL rookie last year was 23. The average age of an NCAA hockey playing freshman was 20. The average age that person committed to their school was 19. All right. And then some new rules were put in place regarding NCAA recruitment, which means two main things. No recruiting conversation can occur until January 1st of a student athlete's grade 10 year in high school. And no commitment can occur the earliest until August 1st before their grade 11 year. So it's important to know that timeline. And I say that because we will get a lot of families as young as grade 8, grade 9, say, you know, what do I need to do to get a scholarship? It's a good question, but let's make sure that you understand if you're going to get one, when that will come, okay? And for most players, it's not going to come until they're 19 years old. So understand that first, all right? Now, the aspects of what you need, the first, and I would say, I don't know if I want to say the most important part, but an undeniable part is you have to be good enough at hockey, okay? These teams are Division I NCAA programs, are serious hockey programs with serious hockey players, and you have to be good enough to play. That's probably the most important part. And then if you are good enough to play, you have to be at least at a certain level academically. That might vary from school to school, but it does start with what's called NCAA initial eligibility. So the NCAA, which is the governing body for all of college hockey, they have a minimum standard that you have to be over so that you are eligible to play college hockey. And that is essentially a sliding scale of your grades, your marks in school, grades 9 through 12, okay? And then your test scores on either the SAT or the ACT. And it's a sliding scale. So if you're really knocking it out of the park, your marks wise in your high school, your test scores can be a little lower. And if you're not doing so well, your marks, but you crush it with a test score, then that can be higher. And it's this kind of sliding scale. I will say that can sound intimidating, especially I think to a Canadian that's less familiar with the NCAA athletics environment, but it's not super high. So I've encountered some families or some young men who feel like their academics probably wouldn't get them to an eligibility level when in fact it certainly does. Okay. So I want to just set that kind of standard. Now, once you're initially eligible, we have 60 Division I men's programs, and they all have varying degrees of what constitutes eligibility at those schools. For many of them, it's if you're eligible with the NCAA, you're eligible with us. But for many of them, it's more than that. Okay. And some have pretty strict academic standards. So if you are in that pool of player that's good enough as a hockey player to be eligible for college hockey, the better your academics are, the less competition you have, okay? So let's say, I don't know if you can see me, but if this is the pool of players that are good enough on the ice, okay, all of a sudden, if these people aren't good enough off the ice, now the pool got smaller. And now it shrinks as you kind of go up that within schools all the way up to the school that might have the most stringent or strictest academic acceptance. And now all of a sudden you have a small pool of players that you're actually competing with for a spot on that roster. Yeah. So that's that's, I think, a fundamental foundation to understand kind of how that works. Okay. Now the scholarship piece of it, each school has 18 scholarships. I would say, think of that as a salary cap. You have 18 scholarships to dole out. You could choose, a school could choose to give out 18 full scholarships, or they can give out 12 full scholarships and then break up 6 scholarships over a pool of 10 or 11 other players. They can essentially dole those 18 scholarships out over their whole roster however they want. And most rosters are going to come in around the 25 player size, give or take a little bit. So generally everybody's getting something. Not everybody will perhaps get a full scholarship, but you can imagine with 18 fulls, 25 players on a roster, typically most everybody is getting something pretty significant, if not 100% or close to 100%.
Yeah. So that,
does that make sense? Is that a,
that makes total sense. It makes total sense to me. Now I've got about 17 questions out of that.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So I'm going to start with this one. Let's go. It takes typically your 19-year-old kid or a 19-year-old player getting into college. So we had a good talk the other day about development, and, you know, a little bit different. I actually want you to go down this road. A little bit different in Canada as opposed to in the States. Different because you know what's in front of most Canadians. When I grew up in Sudbury, Ontario, the Sudbury Wolves were the team that I watched. I wanted to wear that jersey real badly. And when I was a 16-year-old kid, I was drafted to them, and I signed and played. So the development years, well, that's what I thought. I was hitting the jackpot. My next step is I'm going to play in the NHL, no problem, right? Whereas if you're looking at getting a scholarship, it's going to take a little bit more patience. So two sides of this, which is good because you can develop as a player. So where do we do that? And also for late bloomers, because there's a lot of late bloomers, I don't ever want to see a hockey player discouraged that has some talent. Maybe they're growing late and stuff like that. You still got 19, 20 years old to develop as a player. So, and this is one of the questions from one of the audience earlier. As far as development goes, like, what's your take on that? Canadian, U.S. player going to college and the development. What's the best places to develop? And we talked about it. You know where I'm going with this.
Well, you know, one thing that I used to use this phrase a lot, and then we do a lot of research. We just look at statistics and numbers and, you know, where are these players coming from? When are they getting there? What do they look like? What does an NHLer look like? And so on. And what became obvious pretty quickly was I think you just used it, but I used to use the phrase late bloomer so incorrectly. Okay. In other words, if you make the NHL at 23, if you're a freshman in college at 20, if you commit to your school at 19, you are actually right in the middle of the bell curve. But I would have called you a late bloomer.
Yep.
So we tend to take a player like a Connor McDavid or a Jack Eichel, and we look at them as the norm. And then if you're not that, you're a late bloomer. So I think I would first say, let's recalibrate our vocabulary so that we don't call the vast majority of people in that bell curve, we don't call them late bloomers, because then they start thinking of late bloomers. And an example where I think we were, college hockey, when I say we, were adding fuel to that fire, is prior to these recruiting rules that we just put in place. So I mentioned no conversation whatsoever until January 1st of your grade 10 year, and no verbal commitment whatsoever until August 1st before your junior year. Prior to May 1st of last year, the rules were a coach couldn't initiate conversation until January 1st of grade 10 year. However, the player or his parents could initiate that conversation with a coach at any time, okay? And there was no governance on when a verbal commitment could be made. So a kid as young as 13 could commit to a college. They could be offered an opportunity and then accept it, provided that 13-year-old initiated the communication. And what we were finding was a lot of, not many 13, 14, 15-year-olds were committing, but enough were. And what it was causing was other 13, 14, and 15-year-old players and their parents and other people that influenced them were feeling like they were being left behind, okay? There was like this wake of angst left behind every time some 15-year-old tweeted that I've just committed to such and such school and I want to thank everybody that helped along the way. So we changed our recruiting rules so that there couldn't be any 15-year-olds that commit, so that 15-year-olds can just feel like I'm playing hockey, trying to get better, and when the time is right. That's our goal. So when I say that, it's like, first off, it's kind of know the facts and don't make important decisions based on incorrect information, such as I'm 17, I don't have an offer yet, I'm way behind, I need to do something to make up for being way behind, when in fact, you're not way behind at all, okay? Now that I said all that, I realize that's easy for me to say as somebody based in the United States where our model is different. And a unique thing about the U.S. versus Canada, our model is different in the U.S. just based on where you live in the U.S., whether you're living in New England or Michigan or Minnesota or wherever, where Canada, it does feel a little more streamlined. It's kind of, if you're growing up in Ontario, it's very similar to if you're growing up in Alberta, which is similar to Manitoba, which is similar to Nova Scotia. It's a little bit of an easier process. I think the biggest difference being the Western League has a younger draft than the Ontario League and the Quebec League. So they're probably, there's something that they place importance on a year before the same kid would in Ontario. That's about what I've been able to as an outsider view. So the reason I say that is, when you talked about having to show more patience, if you're in on, say you're in Ontario, you have to show more patience. Well, many of those people in the U.S., and depending on where you are, I'm from Minnesota, so I'll say that kid in Minnesota, they don't feel like they have to show more patience because what matters to them is NCAA hockey. So there isn't any kind of draft occurring at 14 that they're placing a lot of value on, or that they're feeling like there is an important decision I'm being confronted with here at this age. Whereas in a different environment, those pressures or those interest points change. And then therefore now I feel like something has to happen. So what I would say when I'm speaking with somebody from Canada who has a strong interest in NCAA hockey, and then I think first what they have to determine is, am I exclusively interested in NCAA hockey or do I not know yet? Because when they say I'm exclusively interested, then it's like, well, then just focus on that path, okay? And know that you're probably going to be a freshman at 20. You're probably going to commit at 18 or 19, okay? So right now at 14, just keep playing wherever you are and keep getting better. And just think about next year. Don't think about 5 years down the road. And that's much easier said than done. But if you look at where college hockey players come from, they come from all over, both geographically and also hockey-wise. A whole bunch of them played in the Ontario Junior Hockey League. A whole bunch of them played 18U Midget Hockey, whether it's in the Toronto area, in the Windsor area, out in Western Canada. A lot of them played U.S.-based AAA hockey. A lot of them played Minnesota High School Hockey. More than ever before right now, we have more Europeans, 117 Europeans, playing NCAA hockey. That's far more than we've ever had before. So there's no one right way or one path. And as much as I advocate for the many benefits of playing NCAA hockey, I still believe your outcome in terms of how good you become as a hockey player is so much more dependent upon you than the place. So it's so much more about the player and a lot less than the place, which I think we put an inordinate amount of influence on is the place. You know, where am I going to play next year? And I always just say, play somewhere where you're actually going to play, you know, be top six, not bottom six. And don't worry if it's in the highest high league that you can get into.
Yeah, that's a great, you know, I get that question almost daily with people is, where should I play next year? What, you know, should I play on a better team? And people tend to look too far ahead and just not focus on being the best player they can be. And I think what we said, and I agree with you 100% on this because I use this answer all the time. It's like, if you're on not such a good team, just put that team on your back and be the best player that you can possibly be. There's really literally nothing wrong with being a goal scorer that scores 5 and 1, 6 game after game, because that's a different confidence than going to play at a where you blend in with everybody and you're average. So that's a great point there. And it's patience is hard. And when I was talking about early bloomers, late bloomers, that's what I meant exactly was, you know, it's the puberty thing. You know, some kids are way ahead of the curve at 12, 13, yep. and they don't catch up for a few years later, and it can play with them, right? And it takes people like in this kind of atmosphere, people that you can trust, and just say, no, just keep working. You have some talent. It's how bad do you want it? So, yeah. So I really like that answer that you gave. It's great. Now, speaking about the scholarship side, you did mention European and Canadian. So I want to lay this misconception to rest. And you really opened my eyes the other day when we were talking about this, because I, you know, lack of information, you know, you make bad decisions or you give bad answers. When I asked you about a lot of people think or presume that it's a lot more difficult for a Canadian to get a U.S. scholarship, or they're just not doling them out as much. You put that to rest, but you want to go through a couple of the numbers if you can take them off the top of your head?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I mentioned earlier in our conversation, there's 60 Division I programs, men's Division I programs. And a side note, we mostly concentrate on men's hockey simply because there's a whole lot of 16 and 17 year old young men out there that are ineligible to play NCAA hockey. We want to make sure they have the information they need before they close the door to the NCAA hockey. And should they choose to do that, that's fine. We just want to make sure they have that information. For women, and in this case, girls, they're all eligible. There's really no way that a 16 or 17 year old girl, regardless of where she's from, can damage her amateur eligibility. So we're less needed, or we're not even needed, I guess you could say, for women and girls.
Okay.
But back to your question on the scholarships. There's 60 NCAA Division I men's programs. Two of them are U.S. service academies, Army and Air Force. Those two rosters have to be exclusively American citizens. All right. The other 58, not at all. Anywhere in the world, if you talk to the coaches of those 58 schools, they are simply trying to put together the best hockey roster they can. And they do not care if the players come from California, if they come from Ontario, California, or Finland. They just want the best 25 players that they can assemble to play hockey. This past year, it was, I believe, 29% of NCAA Division I hockey players were Canadian. In fact, you're in Ontario, so Ontario has more players playing NCAA Division I hockey than any state other than Minnesota. I think it's a pretty telling stat that as there are more Ontarians playing college hockey than there are Michigan players playing college hockey. That's crazy. So
that quashes that.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
And then, as we said earlier, there are more Europeans playing NCAA hockey this year than ever before. And based on the conversations and the relationships that have been built with various programs in Finland and Sweden for sure, but actually throughout Europe, those numbers aren't going to go down anytime soon. So I think college hockey will just continue to become more and more and more international, and that the Canadian player they've never been not desired, but the desire to have them will only continue to grow so long as they make the team better.
Yeah, and I think one of the really good selling points that college hockey has right now is the numbers of the NHL players that are coming through college. Not only the players, but the coaches. So yeah. I think that's a real selling feature too. So I could see why that would open the doors for the Europeans, Canadians, and anything. So that's
I do feel that as much as there still is some misperceptions out there, there also has been a big shift, and people realize that spending 2 or 3 years or 4 years playing NCAA hockey is certainly not hurting your hockey development. And in fact, because of the amount of time spent in the weight room, because there's fewer games, more practices, all of that it in fact does enhance your hockey development.
Yeah, well, speaking of that, that's one of the questions I had for you. So one of my, I've got quite a few students that, or clients, I'll call them, that I train that are college hockey players.
Okay.
One of them that I had a really nice conversation with this summer is Keenan Suthers. So Keenan played at the U.S. program, at the development program. Mm-hmm. And he went to St. Lawrence University this year. And he went to Las Vegas' camp. He's been to Pittsburgh and Florida as well. But Vegas was going to sign him. And I was really proud of him for saying this. George McPhee called him in and said, okay, we want to take care of this now. And he said, I want to do one more year for sure, because I love where I'm at, which is, that's incredible, because every kid's dream wants to, you want to get to the NHL, but he's taking pre-med. So he wants to play at least one more year. He's got two left. And so I asked him, I said, you know, Keenan, we haven't had a real chance to talk about college hockey and the life and tell me about it. Like, tell me how you feel about it. Cause I've trained him since he's like 8 years old, 9 years old. So he goes, Andy, it's incredible. And I want you to speak about this. He goes, the food is great. I can eat anything anytime I want. Yeah. I get up, I go eat, I go to school, I eat. He's a big boy, 6'8" or 6'9". I eat again, then I go to practice, and then we have team workouts, and then I eat again, and then we do homework, and it's a routine. He goes, but it's phenomenal. So can you speak a little bit to the life of a college player? Because, you know, just before I go on that, and so when I played junior, that was one of the things that it's just part of the life, is that what I really liked about the statement that Keenan said to me was, when I played, you could be at a house and as comfortable as you want to be, you might not want to go to the fridge and have something to eat because you might be intruding on them. You might not want to turn the channel, or you might not be as comfortable as you could be in your own dorm because you're living with a family. So that could be like a positive for college hockey. So you just talk about the life a little bit.
Yeah. And what Keenan described about for his experiences in St. Lawrence are pretty typical. And I think first you have to understand that at these universities, they all have large athletics departments, and it's more than just hockey players. It's all sorts of aspiring elite athletes, whether they're volleyball players, basketball players, football players, baseball players, whatever. They're all equally motivated and they're all together. And so it's like an athlete factory. And then what the schools invest in their development and well-being is really unlike anything else that these players that are playing NCAA hockey will experience before or after. And the food component's a big part of it. And it's not just like unlimited hamburgers. I mean, it is well thought out fuel for their engine, you know, nutrition, because there are paid nutritionists that are there making sure that what they're putting in their body is optimal for their performance. And then along with that is also, I don't know if Keenan brought this up, but what's available to him from an off-ice training standpoint, whether it's weight rooms, that aspect of it, and then the professionals that are there to guide them and know what they need for their sport at that point in their life, you know, what role they play on their team, the time made available to them to take advantage of all of that. And then, you know, I bring up that all those other athletes there because it's so inspiring. You know, you're part of a hockey team of 25, but you're part of a athletics department of 500 athletes, and it's like no experience I think that they will ever have that they'll have before that or after that. And it really does allow for you to reach your full potential as an athlete, and you have to put your work into it. You know, you can't just show up. But who's willing to take advantage of those resources that are laid out for them. And you brought up earlier, you know, or you mentioned there when you're talking about Keenan, his day, and it that sounds pretty jam-packed, and it is. And I think that is for those that are still perhaps on the fence or maybe even a little tepid about playing hockey collegiately, there is a fear that can they do it all. And after now having done this for 7 years, it's been revealed to me that there is a segment of people that feel it's an either or. Either I'm fully committed to my hockey or I'm fully committed to school, but I can't do both. And College Hockey Inc. is trying to make people realize that it's an and. You are fully committed to hockey or whatever sport it is you're playing, and you're fully committed to school. And as an athlete, there are academic resources made available to you that allow you to thrive in the classroom. Now, much like the weight room and everything else, you still have to do work. You still have to go to class. Yep. They're not going to do it for you, but they make sure that if you have questions or you need assistance, that you are going to have that. And that's why the graduation rate for NCAA Division I hockey is 92%. It's always in the top five of graduation rates of all NCAA men's athletics, you know, 92%. So you come in, we've had more players than ever before reaching the NHL. And at the same time, these people are earning their degree. And it is, it's all because of the resources made available to them as an athlete, from what you meant, the food, the off ice, the on ice, the 24 hour access frequently to ice, you know? So if you don't have a class on Tuesday morning between 8 and 10, but your practice isn't until 3 and you want to go work on something, go work on it on the ice, you know? It's a pretty special opportunity. But then also academically, you have your classes, you've got tutors made available to you, you have tutors that travel with you on the road, you have academic advisors, you have opportunities to make sure that you also get the most out of your academic career. And in some cases, that might be for somebody who otherwise might, might have a hard time doing well academically if they were just a student, but because they're a student athlete, there are some resources that they can take advantage of that enhances their opportunity to do well in the classroom and ultimately graduate.
No, that's fantastic. You know what I loved about that statement? I thought we talked about the other day. I was like, wow. I preach this, that, you know, if you show me your friends, I'll show you the type of person you are, and you are who you hang out with. And if you hang out with losers, you're going to be a loser. And just that statement that you made about just eating, you know, when you have all these other athletes around you striving to be the best, when you're having a day where you just feel like mowing down on the hamburger, which is okay sometimes, but when you feel like just letting it go a little bit, you've got all these other people that you're around that you're going to say, you know what, if he's not doing it, I can't do it. So I think that's a great thing. And then I think that teamwork that you have within your system, if you have, I mean, you have any desire at all, you're going to succeed because you're surrounded by great people, and I love it. So what can a player do and a family do in the meantime? I know there's some recruiting rules, but what can a player and a family do, you know, to get interested, can they go and look at a college and get interested, or can they touch base with you, and would you guys guide them?
Sure. So those are the two things I was going to say is you can go tour a university anytime you want. No limitations to that. And there are formal tours that you can go on. It can't be a tour given by the hockey coach until January 1st of your grade 10 year. But you can certainly go on a tour. You can certainly go in the arena and the athletic facilities and everything else. So do that if you haven't done it before. And if possible, go to a game. I think nothing gets people excited about college hockey more than attending a game on Friday or Saturday night. You see the band. You see the student section. You see the alumni back there wearing the colors, the rivalry aspects to it. You see the quality of play on the ice. That's going to get you pretty excited if you can get away and get to a game. So that's the number one thing. But from all the other aspects, our focus at College Hockey Inc. really is that 14 to 17-year-old player, really that 14 to 15-year-old player. One, because at that point, they all are eligible still. So if they have questions, either from an amateurism, you know, what they can do from an OHL standpoint to maintain their eligibility, but what they can't do if they're interested in maintaining their eligibility, and then also academically to make sure that as they move into their 4 high school years, they're just doing what they need to do academically to remain eligible. So we really focus on that age group, but we'll talk to anybody. We're a nonprofit. We never charge. We're always free. So use this as a resource. The first thing I would do is go to our website, poke around that, especially go to our FAQ, which is exactly that, frequently asked questions. So the people tend to have the same questions. I think you'll get some enlightened answers there. Our website, as well as our social media, it's not targeted to fans. It is targeted to, we put it together with the 15-year-old aspirational hockey player, male, and his parents, his youth coaches, his advisor, if they have that, the media, the people that influence what that 15-year-old thinks. We put the website together to serve that person and his influencers. So if you come to our website, it might not be the place to come and, let's say, get a score for this weekend's game, but it's a great place to come to find out what you need to do to be eligible. It's got all the contact information for all of the D1 men's coaches, all sorts of other stuff that we have found people that fit that niche, you know, the 14, 15, 16-year-old aspiring player, his parents and others that influence them, that they find value in. So to answer your question, tour a campus, go to a game, and start a relationship with College Hockey Inc.
Okay, that's great. That's great information. So you mentioned advisors, and that's actually one of the questions I got here from one of the viewers. Roles of agents and advisors, how do coaches view this? If you just touch on that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, that's a topic that we, I won't say we avoid it, but we don't have a convicted answer simply because we think it's such a personal decision. All right. Mm-hmm. So it's personal decision. So if you choose to have an advisor, that advisor is somebody that you need to feel comfortable with, and that the investment you're making in that advisor is deemed valuable by your family. What I would like to stress, though, is that if you're questioning, do I really need an advisor? You don't need an advisor. So if there's some you're wondering what's the value, but you know that three of your son's teammates have advisors, so are you missing out on something, or are you not providing your son with every resource? It's been told to us that it's not something at all that is needed, and simply be as good of a hockey player as you can be and take care of your academic necessities, and you will be found. And I guess somebody could state a case that if they're in some far-flung geographic spot, they might not be found. But I can also tell you that there is a young man who was just named the WCHA Freshman of the Year, who played high school hockey in Florida. And I bet there weren't a lot of scouts at his game, but he was really good. And he got his way to the North American Hockey League Junior League, which is NCAA-eligible junior hockey in the U.S. And I'm not looking at it, but I think his route was he played 2 years there post-high school. And now he's a freshman at Minnesota State Mankato. And he's actually got a high school teammate there with him. And they're both doing really well. And Minnesota State Mankato is one of the top programs in the country right now. So it is really hard for a player to try to hide. Again, if you have an advisor that you really feel is providing a service to your family and doing things for you, that's great. But if you don't, and you're wondering, do I need to, we also want to give those families some confidence knowing you absolutely don't need that.
Yeah.
No right answer is what I would say.
Yep. Yep. I think that's leads into, I think the questions might start getting redundant a little bit, but the question with the agents was, I think they were asking about, like, there's a rule that you can't have pay an agent or have them buy things for you. But the other thing with an agent, as you were talking, is if you don't have an agent, I think a lot of people think that an agent goes and represents them and talks to people for you, which is, yes, that's what they do. But what you're saying is just go be the best player. You will be found, or like you said earlier, start a relationship with College Hockey Inc. or make some connections at some schools.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, we call them advisors. Agents are not allowed.
Yeah.
So all that an advisor is allowed to do for you is provide advice to you.
Yeah.
Okay. Advise you. Yeah. Should they start to market you, then they become an agent. They're an agent on your behalf. And then that is ineligible per the NCAA. But I understand that depending on where you're from too, there might be just a lot of overwhelming amount of questions. And let's say the parents have no background in the sport whatsoever, and suddenly they sign their 5-year-old up for it, and 10 years later their 5-year-old's pretty good at it, and now they're just overwhelmed by the decisions they have. And you know, a lot of it is because if you're a good hockey player, a lot of people call with the next best thing that your son should be doing. And you know, I can see how it can be, your head can spin as a parent.
Absolutely. So another one of the questions, we're starting to take some from the field here.
Okay.
Again, you kind of touched on this, but are there some Canadian leagues that are more scouted than others, and should players try to go there? Or what about, and same with the States, should we try to go to the States? I mean, we talked about midget U18 and just keep getting at a better level, but that's a question. Is there better places that are more highly scouted?
Yeah, there are. And many of them are the Canadian Junior A leagues. So the OJHL and the CCHL in Ontario have a ton of alum playing NCAA hockey right now, mm-hmm. as do the British Columbia Junior Hockey League, the Alberta Junior Hockey League. even the Saskatchewan League, the Manitoba League, the Maritime League, you know, they all do. They all do. I think it's important to understand at what point that that's important. So in other words, take, for example, the two players in Mankato that played high school hockey in Florida. And I've never met these two young men, so I can't say I know everything about their, but they were playing what appears to be public high school hockey in Florida. And maybe there wasn't one college coach perhaps at that time who knew who they were, but the North American League scouts did, because that's the type of player they're looking for. And so they gave that player an opportunity, and then that opportunity that player took advantage of that opportunity in the North American Hockey League, and now coaches are aware of them. So no one league has a corner on the market of sending players to college hockey. And in fact, the opposite is much truer. They come from all over. Okay. And the same rules apply. Wherever you are, make sure you're playing and you're having an impact. Okay. So perhaps you could go make a roster of a league that is perceived as being better or more scouted, but not many people generate interest when they're, you know, on the fourth line or in the press box, because they're a healthy scratch for that game. Yeah. And then if you take it one step at a time, and personally, I am a little bit troubled by how in areas where midget hockey at one time was the predominant way, and now it seems like in certain areas, not everywhere, but in certain areas, people are running away from midget hockey. And then therefore they're kind of creating a self-fulfilling prophecy, which is, well, midget hockey is not what it used to be. And it's like, well, because all of you are leaving it, you know, if all of you stayed.
Yep.
And that's because you're being recruited away from it, I believe, not necessarily for good reasons. But my point is, you can play 18U midget hockey and do well there, and your next opportunity is an opportunity in a college-eligible junior hockey league, maybe not that college, okay? So realize that you don't have to kill two birds with one stone. If you're in this league, just who's watching you, it's the next league. And again, if you work backwards and say to yourself, okay, I'm going to be a freshman at college at 20. I'm probably going to commit at 19, maybe 18. So I really only need to be somewhere when I'm 18 years old that college scouts are our college coaches, because our coaches are our scouts, where college coaches are watching you. So at age 17, I can literally be somewhere where college coaches aren't watching, as long as when I get to be 18 or 19, they're watching then. Okay. And I answer it that way because an inordinate number of those questions tend to come from people that are 14, 15, or 16, maybe because that's our target audience and that's who that we're striving to be in front of. But it's all part of the process of understand the reality of the timeline and then make decisions based on the facts and the reality, not on incorrect perceptions of reality that you might have. So
yeah, that's fantastic.
So all sorts of leagues these players can play in.
Yep. So that's a great answer, because it's the same thing. I get those questions every day. People are so concerned in our area about 14. You know, I heard there's a scout here. I heard there's this. It doesn't matter. It honestly doesn't matter until you're 16. It does not make a difference. You can't get drafted. You can't go anywhere until you're 16 years old. And in a college situation, you can't go anywhere until you're eligible to play. So what you did at 15 has no bearing on where you're going to be.
And I do think, though, that in where you are, you know, in Windsor, but there is something that, you know, if somebody wants to compare OHL to NCAA, it's not really an apple-to-apple thing, because they happen at two different points in your life, you know. Yeah. If you choose the OHL route, and I understand why somebody from Windsor would do that or might do that, that's a 16 to 20-year-old thing. If you choose the NCAA, well, you're in the NCAA at the earliest at 18, and that's only if you're really high end, but likely 19 to 23 or 20 to 24 year old part of your life. Yeah. So you're trying to, I think, to get answers in both, where it's almost impossible to get an answer in this one at the same time that you want an answer in that one, because they happen at two different points in your life. So I understand the like I said earlier, the head spinning that this can create, especially for somebody who's not used to it. And just this feeling of urgency where when you just look at that college timeline, there is no urgency to it now, but you're thinking there needs to be because there is something else out there for you, whether it's a, you know, a CHL opportunity that you're interested in.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, so I'm gonna move on to the next one. That's good information, man. So this question is gonna encompass a question that I had. Someone just sent it in to me, but I'm gonna use my words instead because I understand it better.
Okay.
All right, I got a 14 year old. I got a son that's gonna be 14 years old, just like someone here.
Okay.
He's a good player, just like all the kids that he plays with. So I'm not just speaking for me, I'm talking about the other parents. So we're in Canada. We're 15, going to be 15 years old. The draft's coming up, but I am interested in going to this school. I just don't know which one to do. The pressure's on. My parents are telling me to, you know, helping me make a decision. What do I do? And I'm not asking you. I'm asking you it this way: sell me college hockey.
Okay.
Tell me college hockey.
Well, I often tell people that my job's pretty easy because I'm given a heck of a product. Okay, college hockey.
And, for sure.
All aspects of it are pretty exciting to tell the story. But you know, out of respect to the CHL, by no means am I. I hope it doesn't come off that I or
college
hockey is anti-CHL. And in fact, I mean, I can appreciate the history of, you know, what you said Sudbury earlier, you know, what do the Wolves mean to Sudbury? I mean, I imagine there's a whole lot of kids that when they're 7, 8, 9, that's where they have their birthday party. You know, I mean, they just, it's an important part of why they love hockey. Okay. So I acknowledge it. I appreciate it. And I would never say like, I know what's right for you, Andy, and for you, it's college hockey. You know, why would you ever play in the CHL? That's not our spot. I do feel like we can say, don't close any doors until it's the right time. And I do observe a lot of people that close the NCAA door well before they should have, okay? Meaning they got drafted yesterday, they sign a contract today. Their motivation is because they want to be able to share on social media how proud they are to sign a contract with the Sudbury Wolves or whomever, and thank everybody that helped along the way and so on, and get that kind of that excitement of doing that. And meanwhile, they're 2 years away from being a impact player on that roster at least. You know what I mean? Okay. So they've just closed the door to an opportunity in CA hockey at a time when I will be bold enough to say when they shouldn't have. Okay. Even if ultimately that's what they're going to choose, they did that too early. So I will say that, okay? But now back to saying, like, what is it about college hockey? One, from a hockey standpoint, and if you go to our website or you attend one of our events, you'll hear a lot more about hockey than you will about college. And that's by design. And we do get some, I guess, negative feedback or critiquing of our organization where they say, why don't you spend more time on college? Because you know that the vast majority of people that play college hockey are not going to make a living, or at least a living for a long time, at hockey. Okay. And you know that even those that do make a living at hockey, they'll almost all be done by 40. You know, they'll have more than half of their life left post hockey.
Yep.
Why do you focus so much on the hockey aspect? And it's because we know the college part, if you come to college hockey, is going to be pretty darn good. Both the academics, the social aspects, the allowing you to develop as a human being and become a better man, and the friends you make, the network you make, all those things. We know that's going to happen. But we also know through many of conversations that the people that might make really good hockey players, that might really have a good experience at it, where really coming and spending more time in the weight room and less time in games and those things, that would be better for them at that point. Where it feels like we lose them is that those people just feel like they're selling their hockey development a little short by playing college hockey. And that's what I mean when I say we want the perception of college hockey to equal the reality of college hockey. And there are still just some of those people that their perception of it is either 30 years old or they just don't know all aspects of it. So I say from a hockey development standpoint, you're given a unique whether you do it for 1 year or 4 years, you're given a unique time in your life where you have so many opportunities to focus as developing as a hockey player and an athlete with the resources made available to you and the timeline with the fewer games and the increased practices and the time, not just in the off season, but in season to be in the weight room and getting bigger and stronger. Okay. That part of it. And then you wrap all of that in the other aspects of what any college student is going to have or any student athlete's going to have. Of course, the academics, the social aspects, coming in as an 18-year-old boy and leaving as a 22 or 23 or 24-year-old man, and those moments that happen. And from the Canadian standpoint, and I've said a couple times, I've done this now for 7 years, and I've learned a lot doing this. I came into it, I didn't really think much of anything college hockey other than I really liked it when I started. And now I've had so many conversations with so many different people from throughout the hockey world, and certain things stick with me. And this one absolutely does, is I truly believe the person most passionate about college hockey is a Canadian that played it. Not an American that played it, but a Canadian that played it. And for a couple of reasons. The most obvious one is I think that as I spend more time in Canada and getting to know Canadians, the idea of connecting school with sports is more foreign to a Canadian than it is to an American. So not even just college hockey, but high school football, high school basketball, high school hockey, whatever it might be. And then the idea of being forever attached to your university, you know. So there's a whole lot of people that went to the University of Alabama that never set foot in the football field, but my gosh, they're 60 years old now, and you'd think that they, you know, they played every down when they were at that school. You know, it just becomes part of their self-identity for life, college athletics do. So I think when a Canadian comes down to play it, frequently it's their first experience with a school band. It's their first experience with a student section because they didn't see that in high school. It's their first experience with alumni that are 50 years old that love the program and love the young men playing it. It's their first experience with playing in front of all of these classmates and then socializing with them and attending class with them and that environment that you get. Whereas for an American, they grow up in that environment. So they go and do it and they have a great time, but they don't feel this conviction that I've got to go out and be a spokesperson for it. Where I think when we, and I can just rattle off guys in my head right now as I'm telling you this, we've got people in Winnipeg, Toronto, all over Canada, that what I call them is they're like street fighters. They won't stop talking to people in wherever they live now in Canada about, oh, you got to check this out. It's like you won't believe it, how good it is. And then I also think that's wrapped a little bit in that they know that in certain areas of Canada, more so than others, there's still not the appreciation for the caliber of hockey. And since they played it, I think they feel a little bit like, oh, you'd be surprised how good that college hockey is. So you should look into it for that. But I think it's the other aspects of it. I think it's that connection to the school and to their teammates and to that period of their life that sticks with them and almost gets more important the older they get. So any Canadian that has questions for me, I always ask them to talk to a Canadian that played it because they'll get a really sincere, authentic response that they can identify with.
Yeah, that's good advice. Just to go back for a second, you mentioned, hope you don't sound like you're bashing anyone. You absolutely aren't. That's one thing I said on my social media feed when I was promoting this was one thing I liked about you is that you actually don't talk about your competition at all. You promote what you're doing and you do a very good job at it. And I'm asking you, I'm talking sincerely about this because, you know, I was a 16-year-old person without a lot of guidance. And if I would have had better guidance, and more options to look, I'm not saying I would have changed my decision, but I definitely would have considered it a lot stronger. And I've been around, you know, the college hockey rinks and stuff, and I agree with you 1,000% that the life that they have, the opportunities that they have, the fans and the caliber of hockey is as good as anything in the world or better. And I'm being very sincere about that. That's why I'm very happy to, you know, as much as you're doing this for me, I want to reciprocate and help you guys out in any way.
Thank
as
you.
Well.
Yeah.
So thank you very much. I just wanted to make sure you knew that there's no Canadian U.S. college CHL battle here at all. It's all good because what we're both trying to do is make hockey the best place for the kids coming up. And that's sincere. So one more question. But we've already answered it, but this is going to come up, but we got it a couple times.
Okay.
The average. So basically people are concerned about, between high school and university, what the heck do I do? And I know you already answered it. They just have to play at the best level. And I think people have a hard time actually absorbing that.
Yeah.
So let's say someone here in graduates from high school at 17 and they won't get to university till 20. Where do we play? What do we do?
Sure. That is a really good question. And I think that we need to address that before we even get asked it, because it's so obvious that that when I say the average age of an NCAA freshman is 20, and knowing math, well, if the average age is 20 and there are 19-year-old freshmen and there are 18-year-old freshmen, we know there's 21-year-old freshmen because that's how averages work, right? So some of these freshmen aren't freshmen until they're 21, which is 3 years after high school. So when you think of the phrase junior hockey, which we throw around a little in these conversations, play college, play junior, almost every college hockey player plays junior hockey. They just play NCAA eligible junior hockey. So there's a CHL and the three leagues that make up the CHL, the Western League, the Ontario League, and the Quebec League. Those three leagues are deemed by the NCAA to be professional leagues. Therefore, if you play in that league, it's similar to playing in the NHL or the AHL. It's your professional hockey player, and that's where your eligibility goes. Every other junior hockey league that you can think of, OJHL, CCHL, USHL, NAHL, BCHL, and so on and so on, they're all college-eligible junior hockey leagues. And the vast majority of NCAA hockey players will spend some time playing in one or more than one of those leagues. And many players will spend a lot of time playing in one or more than one of those leagues. So my answer to that first, to that very good question, is junior hockey will be a part of your path to the NCAA, a very likely part of your path. And when you go and look at players in college hockey, you'll see that an also likely scenario is being in multiple junior hockey leagues, because you, whether you're saying you're moving up or you're just moving to a different spot, whatever it might be. But also part of most college hockey players' path is a healthy amount of youth hockey, certainly 16U and frequently 18U midget hockey. One exercise I think I tend to do this with people when I'm having a one-on-one conversation, and based on where they're from, I just did this with somebody this morning from Alberta. And when he identified where his son is and stuff, and he's 14-year-old, pulled it up and found out there was a player, just kind of worked out well here. The captain of last year's national championship team was from the same town, a guy named Parker Mackay. He was a senior captain for the Minnesota Duluth Bulldogs, and happened to be from the same town that I took a call from this parent earlier today. And so we looked at his path, and he played Bantams all the way through Bantams in his quadrant, I guess is what I think they call it in Alberta. Played his Bantams, played 2 years of midget, and then he played his first year of Alberta Junior Hockey League hockey when he was in grade 12. So he played midget for 2 years. I think this is how it worked out. And then he played Alberta Junior League in grade 12, Alberta Junior League 1 year post high school. And then he went to Minnesota Duluth. In his first year at Minnesota Duluth, I think he had like 3 points. I mean, but he worked his all the way up to being a senior captain. And then I just also saw now that he's in the American Hockey League, playing for Texas, playing for Dallas's American Hockey League team. He's one step away from the National Hockey League, and he was playing midget hockey when he was 17 years old. And I couldn't tell, but I'm sure he didn't have a commitment, you know? So I just kind of walked through like, where should my son play? And I said, okay, well, here's another person who I think we'd all agree has had a very successful hockey career and is from your neighborhood. And here's what he was doing at your son's age. He was playing Bantams. Okay. And then he played midget, and then he played midget, and then he played 2 years of Alberta Junior Hockey League hockey. So that's a pretty good answer right there. Yeah, and so I do a similar thing with somebody else. If that question came from somebody from Windsor, came from somebody from Los Angeles, came from somebody from Minneapolis. Let's go and look at what is appears to be a typical path for a successful person.
Yeah, play hockey.
Play hockey. Play hockey. Yep, for sure.
Yeah,
you know what, you brought up the early bloomers or late bloomers. You meant that were physically, and there's that book by Malcolm Gladwell, Outliers.
Yeah, it's a great book.
Which, you know, so many people have read and get so referenced. I mean, the information is out there. And the reason I bring that up is there's also information out there that suggests that growing up in a small town, when you look at outcomes, growing up in a small town increases your chances or likelihood of playing at a higher level of athletics, because you tend to always play and you tend to play more sports. And we know the science that at age 12, you should be developing as an athlete, not as in any one sport, okay? And then you should be playing all the time, whether it is hockey, baseball, soccer, swimming, whatever it is, okay? And growing up in a small town, the environment there is much more suited to doing that, because the best hockey player is frequently the best baseball player and frequently the best soccer player. So they play everything, okay? Where when you grow up in an area that's more metro, you see more focus on one sport. So it is interesting that we have all of the facts, we have all of the information, all the data is there, yet we sometimes have to save ourselves from ourselves because we don't listen to it, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, Mike, we're going to wrap it up, and I'm just going to wrap it up with only because it's been an hour, and it's been a lot of really good information. Sincerely, great information.
For sure.
You're very, like I told everybody before, you got a very bright mind. It's awesome. To close everything out, we talked about a lot of things, and if there's one, two, three things that you want to close this with for anybody. There you go.
First, I appreciate the opportunity to do this. Thank you for inviting us and for making this time available. The main thing is to look at College Hockey Inc. as an ongoing resource. So it doesn't stop today. Use our website, follow us on social media, call us, email us, text us, whatever. We want to answer any questions that you might have. And as I said earlier, we're a nonprofit. We don't charge anything. We don't have an agenda of kind of getting you in the door and then giving you all the opportunities to open your checkbook. We're always no charge. So just know that moving ahead. And then, I would say be skeptical of everything I just said, but be skeptical of everything that other outsiders say. You know, all of us have an agenda. I am paid to promote college hockey. Okay. And I acknowledge that. And other people might be recruiting you to their team, not because it's the right thing for you, but because you're their best option right now as a fourth line center, okay? And then you need to say, okay, I get that, and that's exciting to hear that I'm going to make their team better, but is that what's best for me right now at this point in my life? So be skeptical of everybody that you talk to, and I call it optimistically skeptical. So don't think the worst of other people, but just know that you have to make the decision at that moment that's best for you, and not what's best for somebody else. And they're not always one and the same. Okay. So maintain that throughout all of it. And then just from a college hockey standpoint, take from it that we've more players than ever before in the NHL last year, 33% of the league, 327 total players played NCAA hockey. You absolutely can reach your full potential by playing NCAA hockey. And I believe that based on what you experience when you're on campus, it does actually enhance your ability to reach your full potential. But we can never guarantee that you come play college hockey and you'll have a 15-year career in the NHL, nor can anybody else guarantee that. So we give you that opportunity to reach your full potential. However, it's wrapped in a real nice life experience that doesn't guarantee life success either, but certainly seems to increase the likelihood of life experience, success in life, and having more, I guess, say or more opportunities as life moves along if you've had that university experience. So those are the three things I guess I'd like to sign off with.
Well, that's fantastic. And for the people that are close to me that talk to me on a daily basis or weekly basis, they're hearing a lot of the same things with maybe different words, but the same thing, same message. So it's great. And again, I honestly can't thank you enough. After this, I'm going to just touch base with you, and please let me know if there's anything I can do to help you from here on. And I'm sure people are going to start reaching out, because I don't think a lot of people really understood what college hockey Inc. was. And we'll continue to build a good relationship, and I really, really appreciate that.
Thanks, Ian. I appreciate it.